Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to UTalk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Providing unbiased opinions on all things UTalk football and basketball.
All right, welcome to this edition of UTalk Podcast. This is Grant Bagby. Find me at GrantTBS on Twitter. Joining me tonight, as usual, is Joseph Silverswig. Joseph, why don't you spell your last name for our people who want to find you on Twitter?
Twitter, that JSILVERZWEIG.
Not S, everybody. It's Z.
Stay over here in the land of the Hebrew.
Well, for those who are worried, no fear, UTalk Podcast will be continuing with 2 episodes a week as we go through basketball season. As there are 2 games a week, you're going to get some intense game-by-game basketball coverage. And that's all going to start this next coming week. But for now, this episode, Joseph and I are going to talk some season review for Utah football. We're going to talk some basketball. I mean, we've just got plenty of things to talk about now that the Utah football season has ended. And let's just start there. Let's do our players of the year for the Utes on offense and defense. How about we start with offense for you, Joseph?
I'm gonna go with Garrett Bowles. Joe Williams is the easy, obvious answer, but he wasn't playing for every game. Garrett Bowles showed up every day, and he added an intensity and an energy and a violence to Utah's offensive line that I haven't seen before, and that I'm not. I really hope he comes back because he was an absolute cornerstone. One of the better tackles in the country, unfortunately for Ute fans. I think he's going to have a nice, maybe even first-round draft grade, so he may be kind of heading down the dusty trail a little early, but hopefully we get to keep him around for one more year. He tries to clean up those penalties and see if he can't make himself into a top-5 draft pick, which he certainly has that potential.
Yeah, I think you're hoping is in vain.
Yeah.
Say goodbye to Mr. Bowles. He's going pro.
That's many, many millions of dollars he'd be turning down. And if you've got a first-round draft grade, it just doesn't make any sense with the rate of injuries, how short people's careers are. You get that first 3-year contract and you can make enough to set your family up for life. You're crazy enough to do it. And, you know, if he called me and asked me, not that he will, I would tell him the exact same thing. I'd say, dude, just go. God bless you. You're nuts to not leave.
Yeah, and what's crazy to me is I know there's still fans out there that thinks players should show loyalty to their school and come back. But no, I totally agree with you. Go. For my offensive player of the year, I honestly couldn't give it to one player. I have to give it to the entire offensive line. Because without the offensive line, the Utes go nowhere this year. I know it's probably kind of a cop-out because if you have no offensive line, it doesn't matter who you are, who you have at your skill positions, you aren't doing anything. But this offensive line really allowed for Joe Williams to come out of retirement and really have this late season push that he had. It's been kind of interesting. Whittingham was on the radio and he was talking about how he didn't get listed in the Pac-12 statistics because he didn't play in enough games, Joe Williams, that is. And so knowing that just made me lean even more towards the offensive line and giving them credit for what they did. I mean, if it weren't for them, Joe Williams doesn't have that comeback. If it weren't for them, we don't have the season that we just had. And hats off to those guys. I mean, the most successful run play of the year was a play where Bowles and Asiata pulled and ran up and cleared a hole for Joe Williams. And
if you watched the UCLA game or that 80, I think you're talking about the 82-yard touchdown run, the holes those guys opened up, they just bulldozed everybody out of the way. It was amazing to watch.
Well, and that's the main play. Unless I'm remembering wrong, I'm pretty sure that's the main play they're also used a lot on the fourth and short.
Work better
we can talk. Yeah, I mean, we could talk about fourth and short in a little bit.
Yeah, I think you'd say that every offense, a good offense, is going to be built around a play. And you want to say that Utah's a power run team, but you really can't say that because they don't run a fullback. So they don't run a true power. They're not eye under center, fullback clear in the way for the running back. They've only got one running back back there, and they're in the shotgun. Their core play is that pull guard, pull a tackle, pull them both, and knock a hole over on usually on the weak side. And that was the play upon which the rest of the offense is sort of is a constraint to that. And so it's fair to say that the guys who are doing the pulling, which is mostly Garrett Bowles and Isaac Asiata, are the most important players on the offense and had great years, both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's go to defense, and I'll start this time. It's easy for me to say Marcus Williams. I mean, to me, there's, you know, Hunter Dimmick's definitely right there, but Marcus Williams, you know, you saw how much, I mean, Jordan Fogle was amazing filling in, but you saw how much the youth missed him. You also saw how important he was to this defense, especially when he came back. It just seemed like every time they missed a tackle, the linebackers, linemen, cornerbacks, anybody missed a tackle, Marcus Williams was right there to wrap that guy up and finish things up. And that capability, his tackling, his playmaking, just everything he did for that secondary and for the defense as a whole, just to me, nail it up that he is the defensive player of the year for the University of Utah.
I'll take Hunter Dimmick. He's half a sack behind the national sacks leader. He's half a tackle for a loss behind the national tackle for a loss leader. He had a bunch of, I don't have the number in front of me, a bunch of passes broken up. He was everywhere. A high motor player who was where he needed to be on every single down. And I think similar to what Marcus Williams was able to do, covered up a lot of the flaws that other players may have by generating the kinds of problems on for an offense that allowed, for example, the linebackers, who were clearly the weak link of the defense, allow the linebackers a little bit of extra time to get into position and be ready to either make the tackle or, as happened way too often, not make the tackle. So I'll go with Hunter Dimmick, but I think that Marcus Williams is a very good choice as well.
Oh, no. I don't think either of us are going to sit here and argue who's wrong or who's right in this situation. However, as we move on to these more hotter topics, I guess, we may or may not disagree. So let's start with the first one. First question is, was this season a disappointment?
No, but only barely. I think the Utes met my expectations. And in some ways that's disappointing because I try to set my expectations pretty low so that there's a decent chance that the Utes are going to exceed my expectations and I'm really going to enjoy that. But I think they almost exactly met. I mean, we went back and the first game of the season, I think I predicted losses to Cal, Washington, USC, and Colorado. So trading out that USC loss for an Oregon loss, it's hard to say it was disappointing, but yet I feel disappointed.
Well, I mean, the disappointment, I think, doesn't come from the prediction. It comes from being right there and in control of your own destiny. I mean, let's just put it that way. I think both of us, you know, record-wise, if you would have come to both of us at the beginning of the season and said, hey, this is where you're going to finish, and not told us that going into the final 2 weeks of the season, the Utes were going to have a shot at winning the Pac-12 South, I think we both would have said, yep, sign me up for that season. And unfortunately, that's not what happened. I think the disappointment comes when, you know, the Utes are in control, they're playing Oregon at home, and are expected to win, and there's no reason they shouldn't win, especially a defense that gives up as many points as that defense does, and they couldn't get it done. And then you get into, I mean, ultimately, I believe we both predicted a Colorado win last week, and I know for a fact I wasn't surprised. What's interesting is, you know, there were plenty of us, including myself, who are ready to see heads roll after that game. And Hans Olsen tweeted out some film study and then also said himself that he, after watching the game again, that he believes that the reason the Utes lost was on the players' lack of effort, which would just...
They just didn't play hard.
Yeah, I mean, that just plays into what I was trying to say last episode, was that there was going to be a hangover from the Oregon game, which apparently there was one, and it's pretty disappointing either way. And so ultimately, I agree with you. I think it was, I mean, maybe I think it was a little bit more of a disappointment than you do, but it was a disappointment nonetheless. I mean, I tweeted it, and a couple of people got pretty mad about it. But I said, I mean, Joseph, I don't know if you know this yet, but my wife definitely knows this, and other people that have known me for a while know this, is that my favorite definition in this world is Einstein's definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing and expecting different results. Well, unfortunately, Kyle Whittingham and his management as a head coach of the offensive coaching and play calling and game planning and whatever their process is that leads to later in the season is it's doing what it's been doing since 2011, I believe it is we're getting to the end of the season and then we're at best 500 in the month of November, with a lot of years being below 500 in the month of November, only 1 year since before even joining the Pac-12, have the Utes been had a winning record in November. So something needs to be tweaked in that process, because that process is producing the same results over and over and over again, yet we keep expecting different things. And here we are again after a November, I don't want to call it a meltdown, but definitely a November disappointment.
My fear whenever I'm doing this kind of analysis is to make sure that I'm not telling a story because it's a good story. It's a good story that the Utes are great at the start of the year and then fall apart in November. And it makes sense, and it's easy to tell, and it's easy to listen to. If you were doing a movie, that's how you do the movie. But when you start to break it down, I'm still not convinced that that's really happening, that there's some systematic problem that's causing the losses to be towards the end of the season. The last 3 years, four of the Utes, I think they've had seven losses in November of the last 3 years, or their last four games of the last 3 years. And four of those are the top 15 teams. And you're just going to lose those games sometimes. I mean, even if you're the best team in the country, you're going to lose those games sometimes. And losing four of them is not unusual. And then last year was so weird with the injury to Booker. And I talked about this in the offseason, but I think the injury to Siale Fakiloa-Tonga was actually caused a more dramatic shift in the offense. You look at things like sack rate and hurry rate. passes broken up, interceptions, all that stuff went up when he wasn't on the line anymore, together with a decrease in run yards and a decrease in passing yards. So I'm just not sure that that's what's going on, because there seem to be a number of alternative explanations that I'm just as comfortable with, even though they don't tell as interesting of a story. And I just worry, especially when you start talking about, you know, firing somebody, which is where we'd have to go, I think, at this point, if we are gonna kind of take that approach. I just like to be really sure, and I'm just not quite there yet on the idea, the core idea of the November collapse. It could be happening. I'm not saying it isn't, but I haven't seen enough evidence that can. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just, at this point, it's something's got to change, in my opinion. Now, what that change is, I think there's extremely various degrees of what that change is. Let's just start with this. What changes, if any, do you think should happen? And then I'll go into various degrees of what changes could and which one I actually think should happen.
I like the idea, and I think everybody likes the idea of bringing in a quarterback's coach who is a quarterback. The challenge that you run into there is I don't think the Utes have room on the staff for another offensive coach, which means letting somebody go. When I really dig into the numbers, I spend a lot of time looking at yards per play numbers and red zone numbers and all this kind of stuff over the last couple of weeks, and I just don't think there's evidence that the play calling is what caused the offensive blackouts a couple times here late in the season. And then when you combine that with the people who know a lot more about football and film than I do, kind of saying the same thing, saying, look, this isn't on A-Rod. It's either sort of bad luck or bad timing, or the players didn't show up. So it's hard for me to say that that Coach Witt should let somebody go. Dennis Erickson may retire. If that happens, I feel like it's a very obvious thing to move running backs over to Roderick, go out and get either Scott Mitchell or somebody else who's played the position, who can recruit the position well, and who can coach the position in there may be a better way, because you do see a consistent pattern of poor decision making from quarterbacks in this offense, and a lack of finding the open man, making the reads, making the best possible decision. I think that could all be improved with somebody who is a successful quarterback at a high level.
Yeah, I mean, one, I 100% agree there needs to be a quarterback coach. I mean, when I look at this offense and the things that I see that are wrong with it, and I look at quarterback decision-making, Aaron Rodgers, the QB coach. And then I look at playmaking, or play calling, and that's Aaron Rodgers again. And for me, I can understand people are saying that it's not the play call, it's the execution or whatever. But I got two counter arguments to that. The first one being that Kyle Whittingham always says that it's on the coaches. If it's execution, it's on the coaches. If it's play calling, it's on the coaches. Like, it's on the coaches. So that's my first and foremost. Two is I just find it hard to believe, like, that it's not play calling to some extent. Like, you can't tell me that there are not different play calls that have a higher percentage of success. I mean, I can't believe that on a third and seven or a third and long that, you know, some kind of screen pass is going to get those yards, or that there's not a better option or something that might give us a better chance of getting those yards. And then thirdly is, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, we started off the season converting all these fourth and shorts, and then finally teams realized that the Utes really only call one play on a fourth and short, so there's no reason to play anything else. And then they would pretty much calling the man on man in the secondary and then freaking blitz to the hole. And what do you know? The Utes stopped converting on fourth down. I mean, what is so hard about calling a play action pass? Or heaven forbid, I mean, Troy Williams, he is clearly not a running quarterback in my opinion. He just, he runs too tentative. He runs tentative like Joe Williams ran tentative to start the season. And so the option really shouldn't be in the playbook. The zone read really shouldn't be in the playbook. If Troy Williams is the quarterback, it is literally, it's a handoff. That, I mean, that's what it is. And there's no reason to act otherwise because there's so many times, especially on option plays, that he could have easily cut up field. There's plenty of hole. He would have gotten 7-8 yards easy, if not a first down, on a lot of those option plays. And he didn't take them.
I'm not sure if that's a tentativeness issue. Certainly could be. Or if he just doesn't see holes well. I mean, there was that red zone play against Colorado where there was a four-lane highway.
Yeah, true.
Zone, and he just ran right around it. So he may just not see them. But either way, you're right. He did play like a running quarterback this year. It makes sense to move away from that read option. I think that's a core component of the offense that's currently situated. And they recruited him with the mobile quarterback. I mean, he was a dual threat quarterback coming out of high school. So emphasizing the run, I mean, every quarterback on the roster is a dual threat quarterback. Continuing to emphasize the run, I don't think that's necessarily a bad plan, but you need to make sure the quarterback can do it. And again, I think that comes back to quarterback coaching. And I couldn't agree more that there's a gap there. And I think you saw it with Travis Wilson's development as well, although that was more excusable because of the offensive coordinator situation was such a hot mess that whole time.
Yeah, no, and it's hard to fault any, you know, lack of development or decision-making issues with Travis Wilson when he went through four different coordinators, if I remember right. I mean, the other thing I come down to is, so let's talk about the various degrees, at least of things I've seen out there. And so there's the almost apocalyptic option, which is get rid of the offensive staff and, you know, keep Holiday because of what he's done with the wide receivers, and then bring in a whole new offensive coordinator and let them hire the whole offensive staff and everything. I think that's just way too much change. And you're giving up on way too many good staff members that are good recruiters. The other one I've seen is, you know, you can keep that staff, replace the offensive coordinator, and leave everyone else in place. And there's that. The one I think it's still hard for me to say. So I'm never someone, I mean, I've definitely tweeted out hashtag fire A-Rod, but once I get my cooler head about me, that's better for decision-making. It's hard for me to say someone should be fired or let go based on a game or two. I mean, I think we definitely need a QB coach, but part of me is, I don't know. But what I think ultimately is the right thing to do, although maybe the hard thing to do, is you bring in a QB coach and then let Harding take over as the sole offensive coordinator and give him his shot. I mean, I don't know how the offensive line play gets impacted by that potential move, but he recruits well, and his offensive line has been nothing but spot on since he got here. So I see no reason why to not give him the shot at running the whole offense.
And he's been making the game plans, and the game plans have been pretty good and pretty well tailored to the opponent for the most part. They struggled in a couple spots. Looking bad against Colorado made everybody look bad this year. So that's just not that big a deal. I think that's a defensible position. I say give Roderick another year and see. I did a bunch of research this week on red zone offense, which was a real weak point for the Utes this year. And everything I could find suggests that there's a real large element of randomness to it, and that we can expect Utah to do a lot better in the red zone next year with the same offense and same, you know, mostly the same personnel. So I would say give them another year, but I certainly think it's a defensible position to say, you know, let Harding run the show and bring in a QB coach to replace Roderick. I think that's fair.
All right. Any other final points or discussion points about this lovely Utah football season?
No, I'm ready to kind of put a bow on it. It was better than a lot of my numbers expected it to be, and that's always rewarding to see Coach Whittingham once again defy those sort of statistical expectations based on who he's recruiting and how he decides to play games. It's always rewarding to see him do better than people expected. Most of the stats were saying 5-7, so 8-4 is pretty darn good.
Yeah, and I guess my final point would be, you know, something that bothered me is Whittingham's little short rant about expectations after the Oregon game. And I will just say this, as the head of the program, it's kind of his job to manage expectations. And he always puts the South title as the expectation, is competing for that. And so until he wants to navigate fans to a new expectation, he needs to know that's what the expectation will be. Now, on the other hand, I'm going to use this as a transition. Coach Kriskobiak, however, I feel does a darn good job managing expectations. So what Kriskobiak, you know what kind of year he's expecting based on his out-of-conference schedule. So when he first took over the program, their out-of-conference schedules were extremely soft. Really weak, not a lot of big games. BYU a couple years, was probably the best game in the out-of-conference schedule. And so if you really want to know what Kriskobiak's expecting to some extent, I think you go look at what his out-of-conference schedule is. So, like, last season they played Duke, they played all kinds of teams. Like, they had some pretty good expectations, and with as many seniors as they had, and they had Pirtle, I mean, there were plenty of reasons to have those expectations. Now, this year you come, you look at the out-of-conference schedule, and, you know, they played Butler, who's number 18. They're playing Xavier in a week or two, I believe it is. Actually, it might be next week, but I'm blanking out for some reason. But with that, like, otherwise, outside of those two games, schedule is pretty weak out-of-conference. And the reason is they've got so many new faces, and this team's got to learn how to play together, and the two of their best players won't even be able to play until the Hawaii tournament coming up mid-December after grades are in. So, like, my expectations for this Utah basketball team are really low, because I know the whole team's been revamped, and they don't even have their best players with them who are going to have to mesh with them in a Hawaii tournament and then straight into Pac-12 play. So it's a completely different thing.
I don't know as much about the roster and things as I do about the football stuff. I know these two guys are really important, and they seem to be important in critical ways. There's a post player, and there's an outside scorer, and those are the things that the running Utes really need. The other thing I think I feel really confident about is most of these guys aren't going anywhere. It's a pretty young team. I know that the two stars are older, but a lot of these guys are in the development mode, and I feel like this is a team awaiting a piece, where a guy like Pirtle who changes the whole tenor, and then you start talking about, you know, National Player of the Year or those kinds of awards and accolades. And if you can find that guy and you recruit that guy, suddenly the whole team changes because everybody, rather than having to run the show, is able to kind of be subservient to it. Type of player.
Well, let's put some names to some players here. So the two players we're talking about that aren't going to be available until mid-December is Cedric Barfield. I'm not 100% sure on the pronunciation. He's a shooting guard, really, transfer. This is going to be his sophomore year. And then David Collette, who this is his junior year. He's a transfer out of Utah State. The story behind him was that, Utah State wouldn't release him from his scholarship, and so he had to sit for a year, and that year will end come end of fall semester. So, I mean, and you're right. I mean, Barfield, Barfield from now on, but Barfield is a shooting guard, and he's going to be handling the ball a lot, should be able to score a lot. Really help this team. I mean, if anyone's been watching up to this point, Bonham's really been scoring most of the points from the guard level, and he could really use some help, especially if you watched the Butler game this last Monday. And then David Collette, junior forward, 6'8", 220. He's got some experience under his belt, and he's got some post moves. I mean, here's the thing: it's kind of interesting. Patrick and Andy talked about what this rotation is going to do when these two guys get in the field. And the thing I have to say is, like, look, Kraskowiak, for the most part, runs an eight-man rotation, but after that it gets kind of shortened up, right? So right now his top-minute guys, I'm just going 20 minutes and above on minutes per game right now, are Parker Van Dyke, Devin Daniels, Tyler Rawson, JoJo Zamora, Lorenzo Bonham, and Kyle Kuzma, right? So Kuzma, Bonham, they're staying in the starting lineup. Like, those are two of your star guys. Devin Daniels has proven that he's pretty dynamic, and he's making some freshman mistakes, which is fine. We're all going to have to live through some freshman mistakes, but he'll be playing. And then you got Cedric and David Collette that are going to come back in December, and they'll be in the starting lineup. The question is what happens to that rotation afterwards? Well, I look at this rotation, and I'm saying Parker Van Dyke's going to drop off a ton. Him and Gabe Biller, I think, are not going to be seeing many, if any, minutes come Pac-12 season. And then you get your big guy, right? Collette's going to take some minutes away from a big guy. Well, that leaves Rawson and Jace Johnson. You know, Jace Johnson's suffering with some foul trouble, but I kind of see Rawson and Johnson are going to be fighting for minutes. And I wouldn't be surprised to even say Collette and Kuzma, that Johnson doesn't even start at center, is kind of where I'm at. I think, you know, he's a redshirt freshman, and right now it's not seeing that he's got a ton of offense to him. He's making a lot of the freshman fouls that we saw Pirtle make his freshman year, a lot of those, and I think that's going to continue for a little bit. We kind of need to, you know, last season he did get half the season to kind of watch and be part of the team, but it's different when you're watching versus playing, and so now we get to watch. You're going to watch him, you know, learn through all of the mistakes that a normal freshman would make. So I expect to see plenty of mistakes when it comes to Devin Daniels, Jace Johnson. I do think Daniels is more of a dynamic player and will definitely contribute to this team more this year.
Well, I mean, offense is a thing that takes these big guys a while to develop. The post moves that they need to use are fairly sophisticated, I think. And I guess that's my big takeaway. The first question you should ask yourself at the beginning of a season is this quote-unquote the year? And if it's not the year, then you don't have to win every game, and it's okay if you get, you know, your butt kicked by Butler every once in a while, because you're going to learn a lot from that. And all these guys, or a lot of these guys, are going to be back next year and better. And I think what you're looking for is is progress and movement and potential and those flashes of, you know, oh my goodness, what could this guy do in a year or two or three, rather than kind of focusing on the mistakes he may be making right now.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, we've talked about expectations with the football program. We're getting closer and closer to Pac-12 season with basketball. You know, what are your expectations, Joseph? I know you're not as big of a basketball guy, but do you have any expectations?
I'm trying to get better at it. I don't. It seems to me like the Pac-12 is weak this year. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for sort of postseason expectations. But I'd like to see them do okay in Pac-12 play and maybe start doing better as the year goes along and as they get deeper into conference play and you really see that improvement start to take place. I don't really have an expectation in terms of wins and losses or the postseason. I'd be fine with an NIT appearance. I don't think they need to go to the dance at all for me to be satisfied, although I wouldn't be shocked if they wound up there. I know they're on the bubble right now or in the neighborhood, so we'll kind of have to see where they wind up.
Yeah, no, I mean, here we are. It's the first day of September as we record, or December as we record this, and this is kind of the month, right? This is, you know, we get Collette and Barfield back, and my question, once I see this team play with those two guys, I'll really hone in what my expectations is. For right now, I'm kind of leaning towards, fourth or fifth, probably more fifth in the conference, which could very well be strong enough to be in the tournament. I just think, UCLA, Arizona, Oregon, those teams are better. USC is playing pretty well right now. It's a competitive conference, and how it ranks against the rest of the nation, it's early to be talking about that, but I think the conference is good. I think the Utes will probably be in that 4, 5, 6 range, hopefully 4, but I could see it in my expectation will be 5, and if they finish 4th in the Pac-12, though, that's you're in the dance. Like I just don't see how the number, unless there's that big of a drop off, which I just find hard to believe. But we'll see. That's my expectation for the season, and we'll see what goes. But Joseph, I mean, we're going to be studying up. We're going to get to know this Running Utes team pretty good as we preview each of the weekend games as we go through the basketball season. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right. Well, that is the show for this week. Tune in early next week when we get the Andy and Patrick version of Ute Talk podcast. They'll have their Ute cues and break down the latest Ute news. And tune in then. Until next week, we'll see you guys later. Go Ute.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Network. Find us on Twitter @UteTalkPodcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.